you've got a doctor who's advertising, we do knees, we do brains, we do backs, we do whatever, it's going to be lost. That's going far too general. And so if you're trying to appeal to everyone, you're going to appeal to no one. So your whole goal is for your prospect, when they see your ad, for them to say, hey, that's for me.
Welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast, where we help natural health practitioners and wellness experts build profitable, predictable, and enjoyable practices. Each week, we share simple, effective, easily actionable, and proven heart-centered marketing strategies. And now your hosts, Dr. Angus Pike and Dr. Tony Rose.
Welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast, episode 26, and we interviewed Alan Dibb. He is a best-selling author of The One-Page Marketing Plan, and we dived into the nine phases of this one-page marketing plan, how you can go from choosing your audience right the way from the before to the during, the after. This is about acquiring leads. This is about having people put their hand up and saying, I'm interested in your stuff, to then following them through and nurturing them, to then having them become a customer or client or patient, and then what we do to stimulate better retention and referrals. Really great interview with Alan. Covered lots of ground, but just such a clear and concise framework for you to get together a marketing plan that's actually going to get results.
Yeah. So if you'd like to put together a marketing plan that gets results in 30 minutes, jump on in and listen to this. So Alan's book, The One-Page Marketing Plan, it's a bestseller. His framework template that we work through is wonderful. Sits perfectly for us as chiropractors, health practitioners as well. This was a hoot of a time. Jump on in and listen to our best-selling author, Alan Dibb. Enjoy. Well, I'd like to welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast, best-selling author, marketing whiz, Mr. Alan Dibb. Welcome to the show.
Hey, pleasure to be on, guys.
Tony and I have been very excited. As I mentioned in some of the pre-show chat, we've been trying to hook up a chat with you one way or another for the last 6 months. 12 months ago, by pure Amazon accident, I came across your book, The One-Page Marketing Plan, and I have an obsession for all things marketing and read what I can. I started reading this book and it's quickly gone to the very pointy end of my favorite marketing books as well. So thank you for putting that that framework together there too. There was a couple of things early on in the book that really kind of triggered me. We spend a lot of time talking with chiropractors, natural health practitioners, and we have this idea, this relationship with marketing, that marketing can almost be unethical, and really the only way that I should be marketing my practice is word of mouth. If your practice isn't built on referrals only, then you're doing something wrong. And you have this saying, which I really loved, is that word of mouth marketing or internal referrals are like a free lunch. We all love a free lunch, but if that's the strategy that I'm going to use to feed my family, you're going to be in strife. So if you could talk a little bit about where word of mouth and referral marketing fits in, and then give our audience an overview of these nine parts of the one-page marketing plan there, we'd be eternally grateful and very interested. So,
yeah, for sure. Thanks, Angus. Thanks, Tony. So yeah, you're right. And I use the phrase, it's like a free lunch, to make it a bit more international. I would have used free kick if it was purely Australian book. So everyone, but either way, free lunch, free kick, you get the concept. But a lot of people kind of sit and hope and wait for referrals, if you know what I mean. So, you know, that they hesitate to ask for them because they don't want to look needy, or they don't want to look like they're begging for business, or that sort of thing. And they kind of hope for referrals, and that's awesome. You know, it's nice when a referral comes your way, kind of like a free lunch or a free kick. That's really, really cool. And you know, we all as business owners love when that happens, when a happy client. But I named the very last chapter of my book, and I think it's probably one of the most important chapters, is orchestrating and stimulating referrals, which kind of indicates that it's something active. It's not something passive that you just sit and wait for it to happen. So there's a lot to creating an environment that's very conducive to stimulating and orchestrating referrals. And that's really what that very last chapter of the book is all about. And it's so important because it's the after phase. It's where the real money is made. I mean, you'll probably spend a lot of time acquiring that first client or those clients for the first transaction or first few transactions. And you may even go negative on your, you know, the cost to acquire that client. But the real money is made in the after phase. So after someone's become a client and you get them to do business with you either more often or buy more products from you or refer people to you. So different strategies to increase that share of wallet.
Alan, can you, for those of our listeners, you know, you talked about a concept there, the after unit. In fact, you break your process down into a before, during, and after.
Yep.
Can you give us a 20,000-foot view of what do you mean by those concepts? What's a before unit? What's a during unit? And you just touched on what the after unit is as well.
Yeah, so before unit is kind of when the prospect doesn't even know that you exist. So it's kind of the stuff that you do to kind of attract new prospects, to get new clients to recognize that you exist and get to essentially know you. The during phase is when you're nurturing them, and this can be something very quick. I mean, for a chiropractor, it could be as fast as taking a phone call, but for other businesses, the nurturing process can take a while. And that's when you get someone to trust you enough to kind of make their first transaction with you. And then the after phase is when they're already a client. And that's, as I mentioned, that's really where the money is made. And so many people finish when the first transaction is done. They think, right, okay, now I need to get new clients. But it's very faulty thinking, and it's very costly as well from a marketing perspective, because it costs money to acquire clients. So the best clients that you can ever have are clients that have spent money with you in the past or currently spending money with you. And that's really the after phase. So in the after phase, we worry about things like, how do we deliver a world-class experience? How do we increase the lifetime value? And then how do we orchestrate and stimulate referrals?
Yeah, great.
Great. We often talk about, you know, retention, chiropractors and practitioners often, I need more new patients. And we often talk about retention being where, you know, real money is made. So I like that concept a lot. And so if we're going to kind of get into this big picture of the stages, the phases, or in your book, the chapters, where does it all begin?
It all starts with selecting your target market. And, you know, so often I speak to business owners, and this would probably be true of chiropractors, dentists, financial planners, anyone. They say, you know what, I can help everyone, right? So, you know, they don't want to exclude anyone. You know, my perfect client is anyone, right? So, and that's cool, you know. Exactly. You've got a spine, you've got a back, we can help you. So, you know, that's okay, you know, and I say to people, look, it's fine. You can do business with anyone that you like. But when we're talking about a marketing campaign, we want to go very, very specific. So we want to, and the point of that is that it's very, very expensive to go very general. So, you know, a lot of small businesses will look at larger companies that are, you know, Nike and Apple or whatever, got billboards, got branding happening and all of that. And for the vast majority of small businesses, you cannot afford to go that general and that mass market, because you just don't have enough firepower. So if you had millions of dollars and, you know, years to kind of get a result, sure, that kind of strategy can probably work for you. But for most small businesses, we need to spend 10 grand today on a marketing campaign and then get 20 grand back the next week or the week after or whatever. We need to get a return on investment. So with that type of marketing, we really need to have a very tightly defined market, because first of all, it's going to be cheaper to target a very specific audience. But more importantly than the cost is you want the ad that you write for your target market for people to say, hey, that's for me. Like recently my wife injured her knee. She'd did a lot of sports and she's injured her knee. Now, what did she type into Google? She didn't type general doctor. She typed knee specialist, right, into Google. So if you've got a doctor who's advertising, we do knees, we do brains, we do backs, we do whatever, it's going to be lost. That's going far too general. And so if you're trying to appeal to everyone, you're going to appeal to no one. So your whole goal is for your prospect, when they see your ad, for them to say, hey, that's for me. So that's the critical importance of a target market.
And so what would you advise? Let's say we're both chiropractors, and I want to define my target market, my target audience. What are the factors that I should be putting into who that is? Like, how do I decide who that is?
Well, one of the things, and I've been to many chiropractors, and you know, they vary so greatly in, you know, you'd think chiropractor's a chiropractor and that's it, you know, but some, I found that they vary dramatically, and that's from a patient perspective. You know, some really work on the whacking and cracking, others are more muscular, others, you know, all of that sort of stuff. So some really concentrate on, you know, certain specialties like headaches or whatever, and others specialize in just general holistic health and so on and so forth. So you really need to start thinking about, okay, a few different concepts. So who's going to be my most profitable target market? So who are the people that I really love working with? If I could have this kind of patient all day long, who would they be? Then the second one is, who do I have the most fun dealing with? You know, some patients are just a pain in the butt, you know, and, you know, I'm sure doctors don't like to say that openly, but, you know, certainly there would be. Whereas other patients are an absolute pleasure to deal with. So we want to look at profitability. We want to look at, you know, what's going to get you out of bed in the morning and think, wow, I really want to work with this kind of patient all day long. So they're the patients that you would target. And then thirdly is, who can you be absolutely guaranteed to get a result? Like, maybe you're the chiropractor who specializes in headaches, and you know for a fact that, you know, I can help people with headaches. No, you know, this is absolutely my specialty. 9 times out of 10, I'll get them a fantastic result. So if you can strike a balance across those three, then that is your perfect target market.
Brilliant. And then, Alan, can you have multiple target markets, or should we start with just one? What are your thoughts with regards to that? Because someone might be going, look, you know, I really love looking after kids in practice, but I don't want my whole day to be kids in practice. I also really like looking after athletes as well. Do I start with just one target market?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things I'd say there. So absolutely, you can have multiple target markets. You can have multiple segments. Now, when I talk about target market, I'm talking about the target market you would target in your advertising. I'm not saying that if someone comes in who's not in your target market, you can't treat them or you can't work with them. Absolutely you can. But we're talking about, who are you targeting in your advertising and in your marketing? And, you know, I would hesitate to add multiple target markets initially. Like, when you dominate one target market, when you dominate headaches, fantastic. Then start targeting the sports people, or start targeting the golfers, or whatever. But dominate one target market in your marketing, and once you've got the system, once you know you can reliably spend a dollar and get $1.20 or $1.50 or $2 back out in profits, then perfect. Let that run, and then add another target market.
Yeah, great question. Okay. So once we get that sorted, I'm just actually congratulating myself on asking a good question. Self congratulations there too. So obviously having some self-esteem problems.
It was a good question.
I've chosen my niche, my target market you've talked about as well. Where do we go from there? Where do we build our way through our marketing plan, our one-page marketing plan?
Yep. So it starts with selecting target market. The next phase is your message to the target market. So you want it to be a message that really, really resonates. What's the stuff that's kind of keeping your target market awake at night, you know, at 3 a.m.? And for chiropractors, it could be literally keeping them awake. It could be backache, it could be knee pain, it could be headaches, it could be whatever. So what are the thoughts going through in the mind of your target market? Are they worried that they're not going to be able to work the next day? Are they worried that they're not going to be everything they could be for their kids? All of that sort of stuff. So really hitting those emotional hot buttons, you know, what are people really buying? You know, they're not really buying chiropractic treatment. They're buying a better lifestyle. They're buying, you know, time with their kids. They're being able to kick the footy in the backyard or whatever it is. So that's the stuff that they're really buying. So that's what we want in our messaging. It's not like, you know, hey, come in and we'll whack and crack you at 50% off or something like that. It's really about, what can you do to make their life better, and what are the thoughts going on in the, you know, in their mind? So enter the conversation going on in their mind.
Yeah, I think too, because interesting, because we can get stuck, you know, we've talked with people beforehand that if it is just knee pain, like we talked about the example even with your wife before too, I want to remind our audience, it's not just the knee pain that's bothering somebody, it's what the knee pain is preventing someone from doing.
Exactly.
when it gets in the way of them doing something that they love, which is the golf, the kicking the football, the walks, the aerobics, yep, whatever it is, we need to find that next level of that too. Because when you can communicate on that level with somebody, that's when you become, you know, almost irresistibly attractive, because someone feels like, this person knows me of what's going on too. So, you know, when you're thinking about providing that content, that add-on, encourage your audience, go the next level deeper than just whatever the areas that you're focusing on as well. You can add something.
Well, that was going to be my question to Alan, was how deep should people be going on that, you know, finding the message to the market?
Very, very deep, very deep. And you really want to enter that conversation. And for my wife, you know, the thing that concerned her the most is she's going to have to wear ugly shoes now. She can't wear the shoes that she loves, right? And, you know, to us blokes, like, we don't care. We'll wear our New Balance or whatever. Who cares? But this was her major concern. You know, she loves wearing her Cons. She loves wearing her heels, her Docs, and all of that sort of stuff. And the knee pain meant that she had to wear these ugly kind of shoes. And that was the thing that was bothering her most. So an ad to her saying, you know, are you stuck wearing these ugly shoes because of knee pain, would be very, very effective. So
cut through the noise beautifully. It's a great
example, guys. If you have a listen to what Alan just did there. He took his market, took the message, and then wrapped it in something that actually got the attention of someone who's having knee pain and is worried that they can't wear shoes. Great, great suggestion. So we've got our audience. We've got a message, or we're going to dive into their problems and concerns, what's keeping them up at night. What's next?
Next is the advertising media that you reach your clients with and your prospects. So it's the bridge between your message and your target market. So how are we going to reach that target market with your message? So are you going to use social media, pay-per-click advertising, Google AdWords, direct mail, all of that sort of stuff? So this is where you've got to do a little bit of research, and this is probably the most expensive part of your marketing and prospecting phase. So you've got to really understand the media, because if you can spend a lot of money and really make a mess if you don't understand the media well. So if you don't understand Google AdWords really well, or Facebook ads, or how to write direct mail really well, you'll spend a lot of money and won't get too much results. So this is where I often recommend business owners touch base with a specialist in that media. So pay the guy who's a Google expert, or pay the guy who's a Facebook expert, and let them do their thing, because they'll pay for themselves, because otherwise you're going to spend a lot of money and get it wrong. And especially with some of these digital platforms, it's getting very, very intricate. Like, if you pay someone, they can pay for themselves very, very quickly and easily, because they can reduce your cost per click and your cost per conversion. Same with direct mail. I mean, you know, if you're sending something in the post, and a lot of people think that's a bit too old school, but I can tell you, you know, the digital side, the emails, the Facebook ads, the Google ads, they're getting much, much more cluttered, and physical direct mail is getting a lot more uncluttered. So you'll get a lot more cut through very often through physical direct mail. And that can be postcards, that can be letters, it can be reactivation campaigns and things like that. So yeah, that's probably your most expensive part of your marketing process, your spend on media.
Do you have any suggestions in terms of how we would choose what kind of media that we would end up looking at? I mean, does the media that we choose, is there any relationship between that and then the audience that we decided with at step one?
Very much, very much. It's going to be very highly driven by your audience. So, you know, if you're targeting teenagers or something like that, you know, you'd be thinking things like Instagram. You'd be thinking, you know, Facebooks are getting even a bit old for teenagers these days. You know, they've got Snapchat and all of that sort of stuff. So you really need to think, where does my target market hang out? As in quote marks. So where are they living? So are they living on social, and which social networks are they living on? And how are they finding their solutions? So very often, Google will really get into the mind of someone. So if you've got knee pain, just like my wife did, she typed in knee specialist Mornington in Google, you know, so she was trying to find someone locally who dealt with knee pain. So.
Got it.
Really great point you said there is, where are they finding their solutions? You know, where are people going? You know, and again, it's that little slight difference between where are they maybe hanging out versus where do they go to find a solution? Great point there, Alan. Where do we go next?
Next, we want to capture leads. So this drops us down into the during phase. And the during phase has, so if you think of the one-page marketing plan as a single, say, A4 sheet of paper, there's three major phases, and within that's it. Three phases, and within the three phases, there's three sections there. Perfect. I love it. So now we're in the yellow phase, the during phase, and the first part of that is capturing leads. So this is where we, you know, so many times people will spend money on marketing and advertising media, Google ads, Facebook ads, and just send them to the front page of the homepage, and you know, 97% of people will just usually bounce, and bounce meaning they just look at that first page. They have a look around. They either find something that they were looking for and they ring up, or more than likely 97% are not ready to buy right now. They're just doing research, or they've got a few tabs open, or they got distracted, or whatever else happened, and they just bounce and leave. So if you're not capturing leads, if you're not building your email database, then you're really missing out on probably 97% of the prospects. And it's funny, you know, I've been building my own email database in my business through the years. And it's funny, I have people who buy now who've been on my list for like 3-4 years. They've never bought a thing in 3 or 4 years. Then something triggered in their lives or some message resonated and they became buyers. So it's funny, a lot of times we'll treat people like either prospects or suspects, and we think that prospects are ready to buy right now. And some are, you know, very small percentage are ready to buy right now. They're hot and heavy and ready to go. But the vast majority are either doing a bit of research or groundwork and things like that. And if you think about yourself as a buyer, I mean, the last time that you bought a car or hired someone or whatever, you probably did a bit of research. You probably went online, you checked out a few options, compared prices, compared features, all of that. And then, you know, decided, right, okay, I'm you know, it could have been 12 months, 18 months between the time that you first had the research, the idea to research that particular offering, and then when you pulled the trigger. So capturing leads, super important.
I had an amazing statistic that was taken from a company that kind of looks a lot of this kind of lead capture stuff. That was saying this, through the different mediums and products and stuff that are buying, they went, look, for people who raised their hand and said, I'm interested in whatever it was, if you went kind of 18 months down the track, 50% of them had bought. But if you went 90 days down there, only 15% of them have bought. So of the people that are going to buy, you know, 85% of them take a long time. Mm. So this, you know, I often chuckle on the inside and someone says, look, you know, I ran some Facebook ads. You know, I did that for a week and no one came in. I went, yeah. You know, it takes time to nurture these relationships, you know, to the idea of going up to every girl in the bar and asking them to marry you is not going to be a successful strategy. Maybe it depends on what you look like. And I would hesitate to say the people that said yes are probably not the quality of the person that you want to be marrying. So yeah. Having that next phase is where Tony and I see that a lot of practitioners miss out. You know, they're trying to take someone straight from Facebook or Google or the newspaper and have them ring the office. But when we get this step in the middle there of a capture system and we'll kind of work our way through it, process there, the success really you know, moves up. And that kind of leads into kind of step number five really also, yes?
That's exactly right, yep. So step number five is nurturing those leads. And you know, like I said, the three or so percent who are ready to buy right now, who may be in desperate pain and want to see you immediately today, but they'll buy anyway. But you want to have a system where you can nurture people until they're ready to buy, and that's really the next phase. That's nurturing your leads, and that's all about delivering value in advance. So show people that you can help them by actually helping them in advance, right? So often we try to convince people that, you know, when you come and buy from me, that's when I'll help you. But if you can help people in advance, if you can show people that you can actually help them by actually helping them before they ever become clients, that hugely increases the odds that they'll do business with you in the future. Because who would you rather do business with? Someone who's actually helped you already, someone who you know, who you like, who you trust, or just some total stranger? So it's obvious. So you want to help deliver, you know, great information and great experience to your prospects before they ever become clients.
Can I just use an example there of your wife? She's Googled knee pain Mornington or knee specialist Mornington. Up pops a link. How would someone deliver value in advance to her to raise their level of expertise and her wanting to do business with that person?
Yeah, so in her case, she'd been to see several doctors and, you know, didn't have great experience with any of them. So, you know, for her, I think something really valuable, and not just for her, but for anyone in the nurturing phase, case studies, success stories, testimonials will be very, very valuable. And I know in certain industries, there's perhaps regulatory restrictions on how much you can advertise and how what you can do with testimonials and things like that. But you can usually skate pretty close to the line. I don't advocate anyone, break any laws or anything like that or guidelines. But, you know, if you can give case studies or success stories or take people through the journey of what they're going to expect when they deal with you, and maybe you can give them some tips on how they can get better on their own or you know, at least start the healing process, then that's going to be valuable. Like if she went online and there was maybe a series of YouTube videos that showed her, okay, these are the three exercises that are going to really help you relieve some of the pain. And if you got her a result in advance, then that would greatly increase the odds of her doing business with you because, you know, this guy's helped me already and I haven't even spent a single cent or gone to see him. So I imagine if I did do a transaction with him or did business with him, then, you know, imagine what that would do for me.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Thank you. That's great.
Great example.
Yeah. So now we've got the leads. We've got this nurturing system. Then what do we want to do?
So then it comes to sales conversion. So sales conversion is the final section of the during phase. And it's really about getting your first dollar from the client. So from the prospect. So it's all about taking someone from not knowing you to now being a client. And it's really about, you know, if you've done your previous few phases well, it's just going to be a natural thing. You're not going to have to do weird closes or ABC always be closing or, you know, all of that sort of weird stuff. It's just going to be, you know, like when I speak to people who want to be coaching clients of mine or whatever, we have a phone call, we see is it right for them. I never, ever pressure them at all. Usually the phone call ends with them asking to be clients. That they say, all right, well, what's next? How do we work together? And, you know, it's just very natural, very ethical. There's no pressure or anything like that. So that's the beauty of this kind of marketing, is that it doesn't put pressure on you and doesn't put pressure on them, because once you introduce pressure into the sales process, weird stuff starts to happen. People kind of give you the silent treatment, or you've got to do these follow-ups and telemarketing and all of this high pressure kind of stuff, and they don't like it and you don't like doing it, and there's no need for it. You know, if you've done your marketing right, you know, the need is already established. The proof that you can actually help them has already been established. And then it's just a matter of, hey, are we a right fit for each other? If yes, awesome. Let's do business. If not, then that's okay. We'll part as friends as well.
It's such a neat process, because this all begins by identifying people to begin with. You know, when you're trying to market to everybody, we want people who already raised their hand now. And it runs through this process too. Can you talk a little bit about, because that middle during phase we talked about there can be completely automated. What are some of the tools that we might use to automate that process? So whilst I'm asleep at night, I'm having multiple of these nurturing conversations, multiple of these sale conversion strategy conversations, or while I'm either on the beach adjusting other patients or sleeping. So how would I go about automating a lot of that process?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I mean, literally, I woke up this morning and I had three people sign up to my online membership course overnight, and that happens through marketing automation. So I've got a marketing automation system, and there are many, many different systems out there, CRM systems that literally do that nurturing process. So someone can go onto my website, they sign up to my mailing list, I give them a lot of good strategies. They've probably read my book. Maybe they have read my book or not. If they haven't read my book, they'll also get an invitation to do so. So all of that happens, and I've got a perpetual evergreen marketing sequence that, you know, gives a lot of value. You know, most of the emails that I send out automatically are actually very, very high quality content that will help someone. And again, that goes back to the nurturing process. So I show people I can help them by actually helping them. So I give them strategies that they can use in their business. And it's very, very common that someone will send an email to me and say, you know, I read your book or I read your blog or I got your email and, you know, I made more sales in the last week than I did in the last month or something like that. And, you know, say, how can we work together further or whatever, that sort of thing. So you can absolutely put a lot of this stuff on autopilot. The technology is out there, so you don't have to be manually sending emails one by one or even direct mail. I mean, there are systems that literally can, a trigger can happen in your CRM. For example, they've visited your website multiple times or they've requested a piece of information or whatever, and you can have physical direct mail go out to them. So it's about understanding some of the leverage that technology can do for you. It's very, very valuable. And, you know, I kind of liken it to, it's not full automation. Like, people think of full automation as, you know, robots kind of doing everything, but I think of it as augmentation. So it's kind of like turning Tony Stark into Iron Man, right? He uses technology, puts on the suit, now he's flying around, he's Iron Man, right? So it's kind of augmenting his skills. It's not replacing him, but it's augmenting his skills. So technology helps you become Iron Man, you know?
Yeah. And so if you think about kind of examples, Phil, and it's, I mean, even something like MailChimp, you know, the first phase of paid version of that allows you to set up what we often refer to as autoresponders. Mm-hmm. You know, so you've got a page on your website, someone signs up, gets your video series of the, you know, exercises they should be doing to help out with some knee pain, maybe some foods they should be eating to naturally decrease the inflammation. You know, those kind of things there as well. It follows up with some emails that continue to dive deeper into that, give them more solutions. So MailChimp and ActiveCampaign and Drip and all these kind of companies do it. And, you know, they're much of a much. You might find out which one is kind of best for you. And this can have this process going through there too. And we suggest little things like, you know, this mix between kind of high tech and high touch, you know, a little email signature there that just offers to jump on the phone that might just say, you know, hey, Tony, how are you going with those knee exercises? You know, people often get confused. Do you want to jump on the phone? I can talk you through them. It's a low barrier of entry. Mm-hmm. You know, rather than them having to commit to marriage coming into our practice, mm-hmm. we can start with a lunch date, which is just a telephone call to begin with. Yep. And as you said beforehand, when you get somebody on the telephone and they realize that you're nice and cool and helpful, mm-hmm. And again, continue to help them, in many cases, my experience is they're saying to me, oh, can I book and make an appointment? Simple answer is yes. So, you know, if you're thinking about, you know, oh my gosh, this sounds like such a lot of work there too, a lot of this process can absolutely be kind of automated. So we've gone through a during phase. We're now dumping down into the green phase through there. We're into an after phase as well, which we started on right at the beginning of this too. So what's step seven of the after phase, first part of that?
Yep. So the after phase is all about firstly, delivering a world-class experience. So, you know, when someone comes into your practice, you know, how can you deliver a world-class experience? And this is what's going to start turning people from just, you know, clients that are, okay, he was an all right chiropractor, he was nice and all of this, to wow, you know. And wow is kind of what really starts the referral stimulation process. And, you know, the word remarkable literally means that someone's going to remark about you. So what can you do to deliver a world-class experience? And it all starts before you even see a client. I mean, can you, you know, as a chiropractor, can you send them an onboarding package to their, in the physical post before they ever arrive at your clinic, showing them what they're going to expect, the journey that you're planning to take them on? Because so many times you kind of just wait for a client to come in, and then you treat them, and then you hope that they rebook for that next appointment. And really, I mean, if you've got them pre-framed and pre-motivated to kind of understand that the treatment is going to be a multi-phase treatment over time rather than just a one quick whack and crack or whatever, then you've got them kind of coming in expecting something different. Whereas if they just come in and they expect a one-off treatment, then you know, you're probably not even going to get a return on investment on your advertising with that. So, and you're not going to be delivering them a great experience either. You might take them out of pain for a day or two or a week or whatever, and then they're back to square one. So you want to give them a fantastic experience and get them out of pain on a permanent basis or on a long-term basis or whatever that you can do for them. So, and you know, it touches every part of your practice. So, you know, how are you presenting your practice? You know, is it a dingy badly lit practice with, you know, Women's Day magazines from 1992 kind of thing, or, you know, what do you have in presenting your practice the best possible way and just delivering a world-class experience? So when someone walks out, they tell their friends, they say, wow, I just had the most amazing experience. Not only did the guy get me out of pain, but, you know, he showed me how I can work on my diet, or he showed me, you know, things that I hadn't even thought before. So how can you deliver that world-class experience?
Absolutely. It needs to be a big focus, doesn't it? Particularly, and again, we often talk about, you know, there's so much noise out there. There's so many messages. People have got so many options for their concerns that, you know, delivering a world-class experience can set you really above the rest and make you stand out and therefore, I guess, attract different audiences, charge different fees, all that sort of stuff, which then takes us into number eight, step eight, which is about the value, the customer value.
Yeah, so it's about increasing customer lifetime value. And this is something that you really should know your numbers on. You know, we should be able to quiz you and say, you know, what's your average lifetime customer value? So what's a customer worth to you? So for a chiropractor, who knows? It could be $10,000, it could be $5,000. I don't know, and it will vary, I suspect, between chiropractors. But you should know what your customer lifetime value is. So let's say, for example, it's $2,000, over time. So then you know how much that you can spend to acquire a customer. So if you know, suddenly spending $200 or $300 or even $500 to acquire a customer doesn't seem so weird or outrageous, you know. So because you know you're going to, in the fullness of time, you're going to get on average $2,000 back from a client. So that's one, understanding your numbers. And once you understand your numbers, you can start doing things that will tweak them. So, you know, can someone buy from you more frequently? Can they buy additional things from you? So, you know, would you like fries with that? Is worth hundreds of millions of dollars to McDonald's. And you can do the exact same thing. And it's not a selfish thing that you're doing, that, you know, you're just trying to get them to spend more. You know, that's just the side effect, but you're giving them a better experience. You're doing more for them. You know, fries greatly enhance the burger experience, right? So how can you enhance your customer's experience by getting them to buy more? Maybe you're selling them mattresses or pillows or the right kind of, you know, adjustments and all of that sort of stuff. So things that they're high margin add-ons, they're going to enhance the customer experience and they're going to increase your share of wallet. So, you know, can they buy more things from you? Can they buy more frequently? You know, can you deal with them in a way that can you repackage things where you're going to deal with them on a recurring basis rather than on a one-off? So I can say, I know many smart chiropractors have put them on a program, on a recurring program. Maybe it's a monthly ongoing program that will help them stay healthy on an ongoing basis rather than hoping that, you know, they'll come in and rebook when they want to.
Yeah. I think, you know, the question that can be sometimes helpful to ask in this situation is, how can I help my patients more? Like, have that be the question that you start with rather than asking, how can I increase their lifetime value? Because sometimes we can feel a bit squirmy about that. It's like, oh, man, I could service their car, you know, all those kind of things. Just ask this. Within your domain, are there things that you could do to help more? You know, is it appropriate for you to be talking to them about a pillow? You know, are there certain supplements that they could be taking that will genuinely aid in their healing, their well-being? You know, what things are that you can do? And I think once we start to come from that point of view, it's almost selfish for us not to be doing these kind of things. You know, it would give our patients the opportunity to say no. And it's okay when they say no, but we can offer these things and, you know, nothing will lead to this kind of next stage. We'll talk about in terms of orchestrating referrals and great outcomes. You know, when people are saying, oh, my God, I had no idea that Tony could help me so much. I'm eating better. My knee's better. You know, I'm back wearing my cool shoes again, all that kind of stuff there as well. So have that be that question to ask yourself, and that in itself can make an enormous difference in your practice.
Absolutely.
As well. So great. On to next, our point, our kind of final in this stage, which is where we started. We've come full circle there, which is, you know, orchestrating and stimulating referrals.
Yeah, so as we spoke at the start, orchestrating and stimulating referrals, and it's not about begging for business or asking for business. It's kind of like, if you think of the last time that you recommended a restaurant or a movie to a friend, was it because you were trying to do a favor to the movie studio or to the restaurant or whatever? No, it was because you were trying to look good and help your friend and you had a good time and you thought your friend would have a good time. So just understanding the psychology of referrals and why people do referrals, they do referrals for selfish reasons. So if you can set up the environment so that they can look good by giving referrals, so if they've had a good experience, can you give something that they could give their friend or their relative or whoever or family member that would start that referral process? So it could be a booklet, it could be a video, it could be whatever, it could be a coupon for a free first consultation or whatever. So if I've had a good experience, I want my friend or family member who's in pain as well to go and have that good experience, because that's going to come back positively to me. So if they go and visit and they've been relieved of pain as well, they're going to say, thanks, Alan. Well, that was amazing. I really appreciate you referring to me. So you're not, you need to understand the psychology of referrals, that people aren't doing it to kind of help you. They're doing it to help themselves, to look good to their friends and family. And you need to find ways to tap into that and help them do that.
Can you give us some examples of how, you know, if I've been working with your wife with a knee pain and knee's now feeling fabulous, she's loving life, how would be some ways that I could bring that up and make it easier for her to refer people in? What are some of the strategies that I might be able to kind of do in practice to kind of help actually stimulate those referrals, to orchestrate them, so to speak?
Yeah, so a really good thing to do would be, first of all, I think you should be keeping in touch with your clients at least on a monthly basis, and that could be through email or physical mail or a postcard. And in that communication, you would have something where they could easily refer people to you. So it could be something like, you know, if you know anyone else who's got knee pain, just call or text me and I'll send them my free guide to getting out of knee pain for you, or I'll send it to you to give to them. So It could be a book, it could be a pamphlet, it could be a brochure, video series, whatever it is. So if you can give your audience something of value to give to whoever, then that's very, very valuable. I find, for example, my book tends to do that. So a lot of people give away my copies of my book. And, you know, very often if I'm dealing with an association or something like that, I'll give them my book at cost, just because I know they're going to give that to other people. That's essentially my business card, even though I know it's going to give them a lot of value, you know, and people never throw out things like books. So if you've written a book, fantastic, use that. If you haven't yet written a book, maybe think about it. But you don't have to write books. You could write a brochure, video series, something of value that someone can give to someone else. So that's one strategy. And another strategy is to just ask, just to say, you know what, Mr. Customer or Mrs. Customer, it's been such a pleasure dealing with you because you are absolutely my perfect kind of client. If you know anyone else like you who I can help, you know, I'd love to see them, and, you know, I'd love to be able to help them, because most people know people who are like themselves. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, you know, so we tend to, birds of a feather flock together. So, you know, it's very likely if you're treating someone for a particular ailment that maybe it runs in the family, maybe they've got relatives or friends who also suffer with the same thing, and you can help them also.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. Well, we've just walked our way through this 9 phases of the one-page marketing plan. What I love about it, Alan, is just it is sequential. Everything flows together. We go from the before, the during, the after. And at the end of it, I guess the idea is to have an actual plan that's not just ideas. It's actually, there's things that you need to implement, do. There's thought processes. It just all links beautifully to come up with a marketing plan that actually works and is actually going to get results for people in their practice. So wonderful stuff. I've loved it. Where do people go to find out more? How do they get their hands on your book? Where should we direct people?
Yep. So my website is successwise.com. You can log on there and you can get a copy of the one-page marketing plan canvas, which was what you were just showing there. You can grab my book at most bookstores or Amazon these days. So if you just search the one-page marketing plan or my name, Alan Dibb, it should come up. So they're probably the two best places.
Couldn't be easier. Yeah, we'll have links on the show notes for this episode. Absolutely, people can click on, so that'll make it even easier.
Yeah. So, Alan, just a couple of questions about the canvas, and which is the book goes and dives even deeper than what we have today. How often should somebody revisit this? You know, what this is a living document. You talk about that in the book there too. How often should we be working our way through a new version of the one-page marketing plan?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I absolutely designed this to be a living document, something that you could put together quickly in 20 or 30 minutes and literally pin up in your office or have on your desk or whatever, because so many times you can create a marketing or a business plan and it's 20 pages long or 30 pages long, got charts and graphs and everything, and you kind of shove it in the top drawer and you never see it till you're moving out of your office next. So this is designed to be a living, breathing plan, and one that you can change on an ongoing basis. So, you know, if you find that, you know what, that's, you know, I thought they were my target market, but they're really not, let's quickly knock up a new one-page marketing plan. Or you've come up with a new product or idea and you're thinking, okay, how am I going to market this? Again, let's create a one-page marketing plan for that product or that service or that idea. So that's what it's all about, that you can really quickly put together a marketing strategy for a particular service or a particular product or a particular kind of offering very, very quickly and have clarity around what do I need to do next, because there's so much hype and so much confusion when it comes to marketing. You know, the SEO guy says we've got to do more SEO, the pay-per-click guy says we're going to spend more on traffic. So this is all about, you know, creating clarity, knowing what we're going to do next. So that's what it's all about.
Brilliant. Well, on behalf of Tony, myself and Audio Media, Alan, thank you so much. Like I said, it's one of my favorite marketing books. I want to really encourage all of our audience to get out and read it. It's full of really practical steps. It'll walk you step by step through, you know, what we've chatted about today here. It's not a long read. You know, I put a weekend, a few days aside, you'll belt your way through it, because it's just not padded out with so many things that our books are padded out with. So successwise.com is where you'll find Alan. We'll have all the links along with the show notes there as well. So, Alan, again, thank you so much for sharing with us today. It's been a hoot as well. So hopefully we can have a round two later on and continue this conversation. So thanks so much, mate.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Angus. Thanks, Tony. Pleasure being on the show.